This is Dr. What? Dr. Where? Stories of Rural Medicine. It's the podcast exploring what it's like to live, work, and train in rural medicine across regional Victoria. I'd like to begin this episode by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land we live and work on, and recognise their continuing connection to the land and waterways. We pay our respects to their elders past, present, and emerging, and extend this to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people listening to this podcast. Earlier in this season, we published an episode about the importance of cultural safety in Indigenous health. In this episode, we're taking a closer look at one of the ways doctors are getting to know more about this. The Joint Colleges Training Services is a joint venture of the Australian College of Rural and Remote Medicine and the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners. It's delivering shared GP training activities for the two colleges' respective fellowship training programs, and includes several other developments in the development and delivery of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health. Dr. Carly Hayward is the National Clinical Lead for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Health and Senior Medical Educator with the Joint Colleges Training Services. She's also a descendant from the Wanman people of Western Australia and has seen firsthand the positive effects of this training.
Culturally safe practices are very important, particularly in the space that I work in an Aboriginal medical service. I have seen, you know, when things are done really well, the positive health outcomes, and I've seen when things haven't run so well, the significant negative outcomes that it has. And so simple things, that understanding that your Aboriginal patient, English may be their, you know, second or third language. And so the importance of having an interpreter so that you can get informed consent. Also understanding that your patient may come in with many different people, and that's okay, because they need maybe their auntie or their grandmother who has a, you know, oversight of their health. And so being open to learning and knowing that you don't know everything is important. So I think, you know, going through medical school, you learn, rightly so, a lot about the physical health and the medical conditions. But for me as a GP working in Aboriginal health, what I've found invaluable is, you know, who do I go to talk about housing? Who do I go to talk about food? Who do I go to in Centrelink to ensure that they have money in their bank? And so those things are vitally important, because we're talking about the social determinants of health within Aboriginal health. And so, you know, housing, affordability, having food on the table is just as important as having their medication daily.
What's the learning curve like for these sort of culturally safe practices for someone who's not Aboriginal and perhaps doesn't really have much familiarity with, you know, some of these cultural sensitivities?
For me as a GP and a supervisor of registrars, I encourage anyone who has an opportunity to work in Aboriginal health, train in Aboriginal health. It's a well-supported environment. You have cultural mentors, you have Aboriginal health practitioners. These will all be your teachers. You'll learn from them, and you'll learn from your patients as well. But it's just about being open to learning, as I said. We all have a culture, and particularly in Australia, sometimes you realise it, sometimes you don't. And we all have experiences that we can draw on and make connections with our Aboriginal patients. And so within Aboriginal health, we have a bit more time to spend with Aboriginal patients. And so the first point is just having a clinical yarn with them. It's sitting back, listening, what's going on in their world. It's okay to open up about what's going on in your world, what your family's doing. So you're building that rapport, you're building that relationship. And that's really important when working with Aboriginal patients.
What's the feedback been like from the trainees you're supervising when you're developing these skills for them?
Look, my saying is, if you can do Aboriginal health well, you can do medicine well, full stop. The things that you learn in an Aboriginal health setting are transferable. And I have worked both in mainstream general practice and Aboriginal health. And, you know, the things that I do within my Aboriginal medical service, it's transferable to my mainstream practice. And our patients really love it, taking the time to have the yarn, taking the time to, you know, be an advocate. Because, you know, we are in positions of privilege as GPs, as doctors. And so oftentimes if we pick up the phone and talk to someone, you know, a principal at school, or talk to another doctor colleague, they're more likely to respond to us than our patient, unfortunately. But our patient gets benefits with the outcome from that. And so I think, yeah, we are in positions of privilege, and to utilise that for our patients who their health literacy may not be that strong. There are so many things that we can do, but But I think the Medicare system and the health system at the moment constrains us. And so that's why we look at, you know, why do we always have to do the things the way that we've always done it, and thinking outside the box. And so, you know, we have Aboriginal patients who are on dialysis, and we're expecting them to go to the dialysis unit 3 days a week, 3 to 4 hours a day, and then come back to see the renal physician, and then come back to see the podiatrist, then come back to see the dietitian. Let's think outside the box for our Aboriginal patients. You know they're going to be there, so why can't we bring the health service to them rather than expecting it to be the other way around?
In terms of the JCTS, what sort of training activities have you been involved in with that program?
So I run the Aboriginal health training for the South Australian GP registrars along with my JCTS team. And we have a 2-day Aboriginal health and culture workshop. So on the first day, we do cultural activities. So we do, you know, botanic garden tours and basket weaving, and we have community members coming in. And then on the second day, we talk about, okay, how do we put that cultural learning into a clinical context? How can we bring that into our everyday work as a GP registrar or as a doctor? And so it's creating that link between the two, because we know we do need to understand that cultural context. We do need to understand history and the policies that have impacted on our patients. But how do we then transfer that over into our clinical context in our room when we're sitting there with a patient? I think that's really important. And that's what I talk about with our GP registrars in South Australia. Yeah. So it's fun to you know, do the basket weaving, but take your weaving, put it into your consult room, let that be a talking point and say, look at this fantastic or not so fantastic weaving I've done, and talk about your experience at the workshop. So it creates, you know, it builds on that relationship and rapport. I just want to reiterate about our health system at the moment and the expectation that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are meant to conform to this Western way of thinking. And so we are now looking at decolonizing this health space and looking at ways in which we can work with our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander patients to develop best outcomes and not have the expectations always on the patient to come to a setting. Let's look outside the box, as I said, and try different ways and see what's working and whether that's transferable.
One of the key components of the JCTS is engaging cultural educators like Wemba Wemba elder Auntie Nellie Flagg. She says having an awareness and understanding of Aboriginal history can really help when treating an Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander person anywhere in Australia.
Working within JCTS with ROCGP is a really, really great opportunity to educate the registrars that come through, because it's important for them, if they're going to work within the Aboriginal community or with, particularly in the Aboriginal health services, or just in general, they may come across some Aboriginal patients within, you know, just mainstream health services. They really need to understand Aboriginal health, because it's important for them to know that, simply because there's some things that the way that you interact with Aboriginal people, you need to understand that and why. It's important, because if you say something and you say it not understanding, you need to be respectful and show that respect in the way that you engage with Aboriginal people, because some Aboriginal people may take it offensive, and then that can, you know, that whole consultation can blow up and nobody's going to come out a winner in that, simply because the Aboriginal person probably will get up and walk out and leave, and may leave the health service altogether. And one of the things that, you know, the aim for the government is to close the gap, and that's to ensure that Aboriginal people go to health services for their health needs, then we need to have doctors there who can then treat our people with respect and build up a trustful relationship.
A lot of things around culturally safe medical care can be transferable to other areas of practice as well. What sort of feedback have you seen in terms of developing these skills for GPs to take into just their everyday practice, not just treating Aboriginal people?
Well, that's right. When we do workshops, that's one of the things I clearly say to them. You're learning something about Aboriginal culture, and that will enhance your education. But it's also helping you as a doctor to how to engage and communicate with Aboriginal people. And in doing that, that just gives you maybe some different ideas and skills of how to deal with other people of any culture. Because what Aboriginal culture is built on is simply respect and trust. And to build that trust, you have to understand our culture. And if you don't understand our culture, then, you know, you have to maybe do some self-education, because I always encourage self-education. And if you come across something that you're not quite sure of, what I want you to do is then contact me and we can have a chat about it, what it means and maybe why that has come up as an issue. Because if you look at the history of Australia, it has a bad history in regards to Aboriginal people. And that needs to, you know, change, because a lot of our people are scared or maybe just apprehensive of going to a doctor who doesn't understand Aboriginal people, understand our culture. But you need to be very cautious of what you say, how you say it, because you don't know the lifestyle or experience that Aboriginal person has had to deal with. So you may say something and not intending to offend, but you could offend someone because of their past experience with someone or an organisation or a doctor.
For someone who's perhaps not knowing about any of these cultural sensitivities, where would you suggest they start in terms of trying to understand and be empathetic towards Aboriginal people that they're treating in their practice?
Well, and we talk about these in our workshops when we get the registers through, is about, firstly, what do we see when we first go, you know, where we go somewhere? Our eyes tell us a story straight away. And so we absorb that story. So that leads us into maybe asking questions or asking why, or why is that there? So think about the setting of where an Aboriginal person would go to, you know, into a doctor's surgery. Is it the setting? Is it a place that invites Aboriginal people, or does it maybe offend Aboriginal people? That's what we need to look at. If you think it's inviting, you know, well, good on you. I think that's great. Any culture should feel welcome when they walk into, you know, go into a doctor's surgery or a clinic, because it tells us something instantly that, oh, look, they've got an Aboriginal poster over there, or they've got, you know, another culture poster over there. Well, that tells that person, if they're of that culture, oh, okay, maybe these guys give some thought to different cultures. And so if someone's sitting in a waiting room and they see that, that would make them maybe put them more at ease. And so that would then say, okay, I'm willing to give this a go. I'm willing to, you know, trust these people. And so the next step is meeting the doctor. And depending on really how the doctor talks to you or engages with you is depending on what information that will be given.
One of the things that would be front of mind to someone, whether they've got an understanding of culturally safe practices or any of these factors, would be the healthcare inequality that Aboriginal people continue to face day to day. Is that one of the key issues that comes up as something that creates some issues between Aboriginal patients and GPs?
Well, yes. I mean, we have got some great GPs that work within our organisations, within the Aboriginal health services that are run. And the doctors that go in there, they're wanting to experience working within the Aboriginal community. And that's a fantastic thing. Now, some of the doctors that come into the workshops, Some of them don't want to, and that's fine. You know, everyone needs to go and do whatever they want to do. But the one thing I say to the doctors, because some of them, when I say, you know, if you're going to work with Aboriginal people, you need to understand their culture. And sometimes I get the response, but I'm not going to work with Aboriginal people. And my response to them is, how do you know unless that person tells you that they're not Aboriginal, you know? And so it's a funny story that you hear. Some are funny stories that, you know, some of the registrars tell you. And I'm not saying, you know, some registrars clearly don't want to work with Aboriginal people, but how do they know what culture they're going to be treating unless they're told? And I'm going to sit down one day, because unfortunately we don't have the luxury of sometimes in the workshops to get in depth with some questions because of the time frame that we're working within. And so unfortunately I don't get the luxury of saying to that doctor who brought that up, why don't you want to work with Aboriginal people? Are you scared of something? Maybe we can have a chat about, you know, maybe I'm not saying, you know, I want you to go and work with Aboriginal people, but I want you to understand that, you know, it's an experience in life that might be a great one. I think I really get people to do a lot of self-education, because we get a fair few doctors from overseas, and when they come to Australia, they have, you know, very little knowledge of Australia in itself. And that also entails, you know, very little knowledge of Aboriginal culture. Or they get, you know, the stuff they see on the media. And some of those stories just aren't true. They need to understand and get the stories from people who are working within Aboriginal health, such as ourselves, or, you know, read about Aboriginal health services, and maybe out of that will come some understanding, but also maybe will come some more education for them to ask questions about it. We really want, because we do need more doctors working in Aboriginal health, and we encourage whatever they can do to do so, to do that, you know, because, yeah, we really need more doctors, just like everyone else.
Auntie Marlene Drysdale is a senior Aboriginal educator with the Joint Colleges Training Services and Wiradjuri woman. She agrees with Nellie about developing cultural safety skills and says it goes so much further than working in Indigenous health.
Yeah, just to pick up on the point of Nellie's, if you promoted the fact that if you understood Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander culture as a registrar or doctor, you can work anywhere in the world with skills that you would not pick up in other places, such as, you know, working in inner Melbourne or Sydney or wherever. And those skills hold you in absolute good stead worldwide. So people don't pick that up. Often they'll say, don't work in an Aboriginal co-op because you won't get top training. I know for a fact that those medical registrars and doctors who work in Aboriginal health have just been absolutely blown away with the breadth of knowledge and understanding that they do get working in Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander health. And I think the more that's promoted, the better off we will be in terms of getting doctors and registrars into our communities. And in our communities, we then see that those skills can spread, as you say, to other disadvantaged communities around the country.
What's involved with cultural education from a medical standpoint?
Cultural education for me is that while I am a PhD doctor, I'm not a medical doctor. So my role is to look at cultural education from a community level and from an academic level, you know, presentation of PowerPoints, presentation of lectures, presentation of materials for registrars to read and to discuss. So that role is, for me, is very much community focused as well. So I like to make sure that the information that I provide is for the local area, and that doctors who are working in this area know who the people are that they need to contact. They know the area so that You know, we have our Aboriginal medical services and our Aboriginal community services that are available, and who the people are there that they can contact to assist them with their job and to assist with making sure that the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community is serviced both, you know, culturally appropriately and, of course, medically professionally.
What would be some of the things that might come up in day-to-day practice that would, you know, need someone to be aware of things, but also reach out to the local Aboriginal cooperatives or, you know, any other First Nations groups?
Probably one of the most common comments that I hear from registrars is that, oh, why don't they turn up for their appointments? Well, you have to sit down and say, well, if there's been a sorry business in the community, or there is something pressing in their family that's far more important, your medical appointment isn't really important to them at that point. So the culturally different approach to things needs to be understood. But there also needs to be a understanding of the history of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. You know, if you're dealing with mental health, for example, in fact, we call it social and emotional well-being, you have to understand the history of trauma, and the history of racism, and the history of, you know, issues that have been raised in this community that the medical profession needs to know about. Otherwise, you know, it's a case of treating everyone the same when we're not all the same. No two people, no matter what nationality they are all the same. So that broad brush approach doesn't work with us as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, and it certainly doesn't work with other groups. So that awareness of what's happening in the community and what is important to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in this community linked to their history is very, very important for people to move forward.
The difference in what's important to people in the Aboriginal community compared to other people is something that perhaps a lot of people might not be aware of. Would you be able to expand a little bit on some of the things where that's caused some issues or caused some confusion to do with, you know, like you've said earlier, people not showing up to medical appointments, that sort of thing? How else might that come into play while someone's practicing Indigenous health?
Well, there's a lot of things that happen in communities like, you know, domestic violence, all of those sorts of things, racism. You know, racism can be very overt, but it can also be very covert. And Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people pick it up very quickly. And non-Aboriginal people seem to think, oh, that's all right, just get over it. Well, you don't get over it because it's a compounding thing. And you need to be very careful of language. The language that you use for us as First Nations people is not them and they. It's whoever you may be, you know, like in this area, we're Gunai Kurnai people, or we're Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, or just Aboriginal people, not reduced to an acronym like ATSI. We're not ATSIs, we're Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander people. And that sort of thing needs to be very clear. So language and the way in which you use it can certainly offend or put people off. So those sorts of things are really important. I think the fact that every day we find something that pops up in our life around racism. And it can be something like, well, you don't look Aboriginal. You know, who has the right to choose who I am? And who has the right to say that? We don't say it to non-Aboriginal people. We don't turn around and say, well, you don't look racist. They'd be terribly offended. And we saw a lot of pain in this community just recently with the impact of the referendum. It really stood out really loud and boldly that we weren't wanted here. You know, that's a really painful thing after we've struggled for 60,000 years to be recognised, and then to have the opportunity for people to walk with us, be denied that. So that's the sort of thing that people need to understand. One of the other things that comes up in regularly is that of the stolen generation and that misunderstanding that, you know, it happened a long time ago. I have colleagues working alongside me that are part of the stolen generation, and I can tell you they've never forgotten it. Even though some of them have had positive experiences with their adopted families, they still have that gap there of knowing who they are and where they're from, and have had stolen childhood and memories with their family, their biological family, taken away from them. So those sorts of things are ever present in our communities, along with the stereotyping of, you know, you're all lazy, you don't want to work, you're all lying around on the dole, drunks and drug addicts, all the negative stuff that is right across the communities, non-Aboriginal and Aboriginal, and not everybody fits into those categories, but you seem to have our people lumped into those categories very effectively by the rest of the community, or a lot of the community.
That is something where it is very easy to, you know, bring up the enormous weight of historical trauma and inequities, you know, when you're seeing an Indigenous patient. In terms of getting across all of these issues and being aware of them and ensuring that you're practicing and creating a culturally safe environment, what effect does that have to an Indigenous person?
Well, it makes you go back to the doctor. If you have a doctor that has taken an interest in you, and I always tell the registrars, the power of one is very, very powerful. If you can make one Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander person well and make sure that they're well cared for, the overflow of that is enormous. It means the community knows that you're a caring, understanding doctor who will listen to their needs, and that you're a caring and understanding doctor that will go beyond his role to make sure that you as a patient are looked after and cared for, and that you are followed up, and that he or she may, you know, want you to be a strong, healthy person, and you have that support. So the whole thing of just listening and understanding, and if you don't understand, ask the question. If you still don't want to ask the question, go and learn. There's plenty of resources out there and plenty of places where you can find out a lot of this information and educate yourself as a non-Aboriginal person and start to think about it from a different perspective. Have a different worldview than just the narrow one that it moves people to one side that don't fit into that narrow lens that you've chosen for yourself. And you also need to recognise privilege. You know, when people say, oh, there's plenty of jobs out there, why don't Aboriginal people just get a job? It's not that easy. If you don't have a decent education, you don't get a decent job. If you don't get a decent job, you can't afford decent housing. And if you haven't got a decent house, then you can't afford decent health. And you don't have the funds and the wherefore to be able to buy decent, high-quality food that you need to feed your family and yourself. So it's that cycle of poverty that's really difficult to break. And until we have a different way of dealing with that, that we can have some equity in Australia, not just in the medical workforce, but right across Australia, and that real equity comes into place, then I don't see that I will see a whole lot of change in the rest of my life.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about the JCTS by heading to the link in the episode description. We've covered all kinds of aspects of studying and training in rural medicine, and there's plenty more episodes to listen to in our feed. The Northwest Victoria and Gippsland Regional Training Hubs have commissioned this podcast to help medical students and junior doctors learn more about training and practicing medicine in regional Australia. There are hubs all across the country. To find out where your nearest regional training hub is, visit the link in the episode show notes or just search regional training hubs. And finally, this podcast was brought to you by Monash Rural Health, presented by Patrick Laverick, that's me, and it was made possible by funding from the Rural Health Multidisciplinary Training Program at the Commonwealth Department of Health.